Welcome to Portraits of Us, a photo story of our community, the podcast, where we highlight the artists, creatives, entrepreneurs, and the everyday people shaping our community one story at a time. I'm your host, Robes Garcia, along with co-host Sylvia Mezalinska. And today we are honored to sit down with Laura Marie, an independent artist whose music isn't just something you listen to, it's something you feel. As a singer-songwriter, blogger, and music publisher, she has navigated the industry with honesty and heart, earning accolades like the Independent Music Award and the onstage Texas Lilith Fair competition. But perhaps her most powerful work comes in the form of her project, Too Sweet, Songs for Setting Boundaries, a deeply personal exploration of healing, self-protection, and reclaiming one's space in the world. In this episode, we talk about songwriting as a form of survival, the business of independent music, and what it means to use your voice both on and off the stage. Let's dive in. So we're here with Laura Marie, a very talented and awesome person that I've known for, gosh, I think I was telling on the way up, I was talking to Sylvia here. I think it's like almost 30 years now.
Probably.
Because I think, when I first met you is when you and JP
were
starting. Y'all were just a duo at that time.
Right. We hadn't gotten Reezy yet.
And that's how I met you was through him. And then all the different bands and stuff in between, and then your solo career and stuff. And it's just like, it's been awesome. You grew up in San Antonio, on the west side. San Antonio, you went to, Jefferson.
Jefferson, right? The first 5 years of my life was over near, off of Nogalitos.
Yeah,
okay. And then we moved to the Jefferson area, and that's where I went to school.
So growing up, was there a lot of poetry and music in your house?
There was always music in the house. And my dad had an old guitar that we would play with, and then they'd get us little keyboards and things like that. But it was... I had a record player, and I had inherited she didn't pass away or anything, but my aunt gave me a bunch of 45s. And so I would sit there and listen to them, just listen constantly to the lyrics and trying to decipher everything they said. My dad actually wrote lyrics for a band a long time ago, like way back when, and in Spanish. And we actually used to have that. We can't find the record anywhere, but... So there was a little bit of that in the house. My dad wasn't musical, like he didn't play any instruments or anything of that nature. I grew up very, very shy. So I was really stage fright completely all the time. But I loved writing poetry and I loved writing lyrics.
Yeah. And then when you graduated from high school, did you go directly into...
No, I went to UT Austin. I thought I was going to be a marine biologist. Mm-hmm. I loved the ocean, that any idea of fish and all those things. I wanted to study. I love science. So all those things I really wanted to get into. And I even took a summer program where there was, a science oceanography sort of thing down at Texas, A&M Galveston. Mm-hmm. And so I went to UT Austin thinking I was going to do that, and I had a nervous breakdown. And during that breakdown, the thing that got me through was music.
And after that, you were out for a couple of years from college, correct? And then you started at St. Mary's a little later, around that time?
Later. And I'm trying to think of how it worked chronologically, because I came home. I went to Our Lady of the Lake for like a semester. Then I went to San Antonio College. Mm-hmm. And while I was there, I decided to like really get into the music part of it, because that's the one thing that kind of made me happy or helped me sort of process things that I was going through. And while I was doing that, I was going to get my associates in music, and Alice Gomez, she was a composer in residence there, I think, or was that at St. Mary's? She taught at San Antonio College at that time, and she pulled me aside and she said, "You need to go get your 4-year degree. You just don't stop here."
Okay.
So, and I ended up going to St. Mary's. I wanted to concentrate in songwriting. They didn't have that there. So they put together a program for me to, for my concentration to be in composition. And I got to study with Alice and with Doug Boyer and with brother Dr. Michael Sullivan. So all those three composers work with me in helping me concentrate in composition, and I got my degree in music education.
Yeah, and after that, did you start teaching?
Yes. I taught for a very short amount of time because the whole idea for me was I thought, well, teaching is a great fallback career for, you know, a musician. It's sort of like a side gig for a musician, which is the dumbest thing I think I ever thought in my life. So I got my degree in music education. I started teaching and I was like, oh, this is not for me. Like, this is not something I'm in my head a lot. And that just wasn't fair to the kids, you know, because they really needed full on guidance, attention, you know, just to be totally focused in the choir program at the school that I was in was to help them achieve their goals. And I didn't have the bandwidth for it. Mm-hmm. So I was there for about a year, maybe, and then maybe a year and a half, I can't remember. And then I left and I went and got a job at an insurance agency where I could have my brain free while I'm stuffing envelopes and, you know, stuff like that to write lyrics in my head and then come home and write them down. Yeah. Yeah.
So like through all that time, you were still writing poetry and writing lyrics.
Yeah.
Were you actually composing them into songs or were they just ideas that you had?
There were songs and ideas. I had a friend of mine that I knew, actually a friend that I met JP through. Mm-hmm. He was the bass player in my band and a good friend of yours as well. And we met because I laugh when I think about this. We were in some sort of Christian rock band. So we ended up playing in a studio. The guy we met through was an engineer and he was learning to record. So he basically used his band, which was us, as, you know, an experiment of recording in the studio. And we did that for a while. We co-wrote all the songs and then we had a massive falling out. And at that point, it just sort of, we never got out of the studio. We never made it to a gig.
Yeah.
We just played in the studio and then it was just like, I hate all of this and I hate everybody. And, you know, it was awful. And then JP and I just ended up continuing on together, you know, and then we decided we need to put an ad in the paper.
So how did you decide to, okay, after the band broke, to just say, hey, I'm going to go on my own?
I was ready. I was like, I don't want to be in a band again. It's like herding cats. You know, I was very bitter. You know, I had also lost a lot of my own self-esteem of being able to function in a group dynamic.
Yeah.
You know, I felt that I had acted very immaturely about a lot of things and I didn't really know that I could make it work again. And it just was painful. It was emotionally painful too. So I didn't want to do that. And I said, you know, I told Mac at the time that I think I just want to write songs for other artists because I'm really more of a songwriter who sings rather than a singer who writes songs. Mm-hmm. And it's the writing for me has always been the thing I love the most out of everything that I do is writing. So I thought I'll just write and that's it. But then I wrote a couple of songs that I was just like, I don't want anybody else to sing these. these are my babies. Yeah. You know, they were so personal to me and what I was dealing with emotionally at the time. And I was like, well, let's just go ahead and record, you know, what you have. And so I ended up, I think, coming out with like 12 different songs that we chose and recorded. And that was my solo album. I had just been in a really bad pattern of different relationships I built in the music industry that just weren't healthy for me. Mm-hmm. Like I was not healthy to be in those relationships. And they just, I found myself not able to really, I think I went through about 3 or 4 years where I was just declining mentally into depression because I just felt really, really lost. And I really felt disconnected from my own, what do I even want in the music industry? Because I don't find joy in any of it. And I began to understand that I really had never, I was really just doing what I thought everybody wanted me to do.
Yeah.
And it was just more and more of that all the time. So there was really no life to it. There was no real spark in it anymore, just going through the motions. And I began to get really resentful and down and depressed and that sort of thing. So when I sort of broke free from all that, now here comes the pandemic. And what am I going to do? And I had for a while been wanting to write about some of the experiences I've been through. Mm-hmm. And how I got from being this person who went into music because it healed me and how separated I got from that and how much that the traumas that I was exposed to at a very young age, how that fed into all these relationships and how it sort of doomed them from the start in a way, you know, and how it affected my life and my relationship and my family, and how I nearly destroyed my marriage and my family and myself, mm-hmm. and then had to climb out of that. I thought that was, if I could get through this, then I need to write about this, because I think a lot of people go through things that they are made through no fault of their own, a trauma or something, especially because I'm a sexual assault survivor. So from a very young age, I was 8 years old when it started. Mm-hmm. And so I think when you go through something like that at a young age, you develop ideas about yourself that are rather stunted, you know, yeah. like, or just, you carry a lot of shame, and then you act out in ways that seem to me, I just thought there was something wrong with me, only to find out it's like, no, this is what happens to people who suffer that, but nobody knows it because nobody talks about it. Nobody, you know, it took a therapist in my 40s to say, that's typical. That's typical of somebody who suffered what you suffered. So, and it took me all that time to be able to tell her, this is what I've been through and this is what I've done. And that took years of therapy to get to the point where I could be that blatantly honest about my life. Yeah. And then for her to turn and say, that's typical. That's what happens. And I was like, oh, I'm not the worst person on the planet. You know, it's kind of one of those things. So it was a revelation, and also helped me to really understand the dynamics that I was setting up in my own life, and how other people were affected by it, and really how it was sort of a magnet for people that would take advantage of that situation as well. So yeah. It was like, yeah, I thought it was important to write about it. And so the songs came out, mm-hmm. just, and then the book.
So you mentioned just now, and also in the book, that you went to therapy for years. Mm-hmm. And I was curious, how did you get to the point where you finally felt comfortable sharing those stories with the world? What inspired you to write the book?
Let me think. It took a lot of years for me to even find a therapist I could trust. And mm-hmm. So I had a series of different therapists that helped me with different things. I think as my life started, you know, I kept running into the same issues over and over again. I started getting more desperate, and I started to understand you're not going to get through this until you are rock bottom and you are just surrendered to 100% honesty. Like, mm-hmm. you have to be completely honest with yourself. And that sort of opened me up to a lot of introspection. Like, what am I really thinking? What am I really feeling? And I was able to sit in the room with a therapist and just say, instead of second guessing and worrying about what the therapist is going to think of me, just go vomiting it all out and saying, this is what's in my head. The release that I felt from that, and the change in how I saw myself, was a big inspiration for writing the book, because mm-hmm. I wanted other people to feel that. I think part of that is too, that each of the chapters is about a different person that I had an interaction with. And, there was a huge thing in me of wanting to help and heal other people. Thinking, not being very self-aware, is like, no, what you really want is to be healed yourself. You're just trying to, hoping that you do it for other people, and somehow that'll rescue you. That'll, you know, solve your own inner problem. And I think when I started out writing the book, it was this idea, like, I was so sad that I could not change those people that I had those interactions with. I was sad that I couldn't do something, but here was a way I could sort of tell people, this is what I saw in that interaction, and maybe you don't have to go through the same thing. Maybe you can, because it's one of those problems you see out in the world, just like, oh, like if you just did this, or if you just said this, or you're just honest about this, if you could just, it's not as scary as you think it is, because I think a lot of people get really, really scared to look at themselves and to question what they think and believe. Like, questioning what you believe when that's your holding your world together mm-hmm. is terrifying. So I know it was terrifying for me, because I just thought, I mean, for the longest time, one of the lies in my head was that, like, I can't be 100% me or my marriage will fall apart. And that was not true. Mm-hmm. I mean, my husband loved me for me, But in the back of my head, it's like, if he knew how awful of a person I was, he's like, I already know who you are, you know? Him reading the book, he's just like, though, he was like, this is the first time I understood the way your mind worked through all this. Like, I never knew you thought those things about yourself. Like, I never understood that, because he has a natural sense of ease and calm, and everything's okay. I've never had that in my life. You know, I've always had this underlying, like, when's the next shoe gonna fall? And, you know, that sort of thing. So I think it was just, it was hard. It's never been hard for me to, like, want to tell the truth. Even if it hurts, even if it's scary, even if it's embarrassing, I want to tell the truth. I feel almost like if I have something that I feel needs to be said, that I know is truthful, and I'm not saying it, I feel itchy. I feel like I have to say it to somebody. I have to tell somebody. Like, I can't just let it fester inside me. I have to say it out loud. Because I know there's a lot of people, well, I have a lot of friends who are just like, I could never talk about that stuff in public. And to me, it's just like, I can't, I feel like I'm hiding something, and I feel like it doesn't feel right to me. It feels icky.
If you enjoyed this small sample of Laura Marie's interview and would like to view her full video podcast interview or any of our other guests' interviews, please go to Portraits of Us, a photo story of our community's website at portraitsofus.net.